Welcome to Season 9, Episode 5 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 29th of March, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, hello.
And Laura.
Hiya.
And Mark.
Hello.
Hello. How is everyone?
Great.
Good, yes, pretty you. Good.
So, what have people been up to since last time we got together? Laura, what have you been up to?
I did a talk in London on my ambient kettle project.
What now?
What is that?
I don't think you've seen. You may have not have seen. Well, it's not just mine. Andy Stanford Clark and I did a project you know how I monitor the appliances in my house for energy?
Yeah.
So I can detect when the kettle's on or not by whether it's running at 3,000 watts or not.
Or whether you press the switch to turn it on or not.
No, somebody externally. Okay. So every time I switch my kettle on, it tweets to a private Twitter account, and my mum's subscribed to that account. So my mum knows when I'm having a cup of tea.
Oh.
And so we did this ambient kettle project where Andy built a physical kettle to represent the Twitter account so that it lights up and makes kettle noises when I make a cup of
Wouldn't
tea.
Wouldn't it be great if you could make your mum's kettle go on and make her a cup of tea whenever you make a cup of tea? I mean, yes. She might end up with a lot of unwanted cups of tea.
That sounds like a health and safety gone mad. This sounds very much like your Nabaztag bunnies, like replicating
yes.
that, doesn't it?
It was partly inspired by that, yes.
Sweet.
So I did a talk.
How did it go?
Excellent.
It went well, thank you. Yeah. It was a shorter version of the one that I did at ThingMonk before Christmas.
Awesome.
And Alan, what have you been up to?
So last week I said that I got a Pi 3 and I didn't, and we didn't have a snappy image for it. And in the interim couple of weeks, Oliver Gravett has made a snappy image for the Pi 3. So Yay. I've put that on my stack of pies. I've got a stack of 3 Raspberry Pis on my desk. And I went out and bought cases for them. Well, I ordered them from Amazon, which is amounts to much the same thing as going out and buying things. And then they're Lego, so you can stack them, or they're Lego compatible, should I say, and you could build Lego around them. So any odd piece of Lego I find gets stuck onto the boxes of my Raspberry Pis.
Okay, right, just roll back a bit there. What? All of your Raspberry Pi cases are Lego compatible?
Yes.
And stack?
Cool.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to need a link to that in the show notes, yeah. because that sounds like a purchase, because then my daughter could make all of my Raspberry Pi cases for me.
And they're different colours as well. So I know that the one running, the Pi 2 that is running the stable version of Ubuntu Snappy is the one in the blue Lego. The one that's running, the Pi 2 that's running the Edge rolling release Snappy is the red Lego. And the black Lego is the Pi 3. And I've even got the same colour Ethernet cables coming out of them as well. So when I look at the other end, the
OCD router, specialist.
Yeah, it wasn't planned that way. I just happened to rummage around in my box O cables, and I happened to pull out the 3 that were the right color. I was like, oh my God, this is destiny. So yeah.
You can say it wasn't planned that way and the internet won't believe you.
Exactly. And I've been using them to make snappy packages for applications that I thought might be good to Snappify, including Qtox, which is quite a cool encrypted chat system that includes voice and video. Agario, which is a fun game. There's a free software version on GitHub, and another program called UGet. I've been Snappifying those, which is fun.
Mm.
There you go. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, should we get on with it?
Yes.
And now it's time for the news. Alan, what's first in the news this week?
A tablet when you want it and a PC when you need it. That is the strapline for the BQ Aquarius M10 Ubuntu Edition tablet, which is available in 2 editions. So not only has there been 1 Ubuntu tablet come out, there's actually 2. The M10 HD and the M10 FHD. Awesome.
Is this like actual convergence?
Is this like, yeah, it's like the future in a web store that you can order now and it come in a few weeks' time.
OMG.
I know, right?
And how do these two models differ?
So they've got a different resolution screen. The HD version is 1280 by 800. It's got a 5 megapixel rear camera, 1.3 gigahertz quad-core processor. The full HD one has a full HD screen, 1920 by 1200, 8 meg rear camera, and a 1.5 gigahertz quad-core processor. And the other difference is they're different colors. The HD one's white, the full HD one's black. And you can order them from the BQ store.
Sorry.
I was going to say, Popey, have you seen one of these yet?
I've seen someone holding one at a distance in the office. One of the guys, John McAleely, who manages the devices team, I was in the office a little while ago and he was waving one around. He had one in his hand and it turns out it wasn't a real one. It was like an engineering mock-up. So it wasn't even a real proper one. But that was months ago. But no, I've never held one or tried one. And I mentioned this to one of the community guys, Andrew Hazen, who works on the music app. And I said, oh, I haven't even seen one yet. And he went, oh, I have. So he went to the London office a little while ago. There was a sprint and he got invited to go down to the London office and do some hacking. And yeah, he got to play with some of the new devices. I haven't even seen them yet. So I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. These are going to be running the current Ubuntu Touch, I presume.
Yeah. Yes. OTA 10, which comes out in 2 weeks as we record this. A week, 2 weeks, something like that. So they'll come out of the factory with the latest over-the-air update.
And you attach a Bluetooth keyboard and you just, I assume, on the screen on the tablet, you get a windowed mode kind of thing.
Yeah, so if you've got one of those keyboards that's got like a stand, or you put the tablet in a stand and then attach a keyboard somehow, whether it's USB or Bluetooth, and a mouse, then you're going to get basically a desktop on the tablet screen.
Or a laptop, kind of.
Yeah. Sorry, a desktop as in...
Yeah, a desktop
paradigm. Yes, on your tablet. And then when you unplug them or disconnect the Bluetooth, it goes back into, like, tablet mode, finger mode.
So is this screen still set up to be like a touch screen when you're in desktop mode?
It does both. So it'll accept... finger gestures on the screen, so you could do all the swipey stuff. If you lean over and like touch the screen, it doesn't switch the screen off when there's a mouse connected. You can use either, and actually both at the same time, so you can like click stuff and point, you know, at the
really
same time. Yes,
like multi-pointer kind of.
Yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, but they'd both be seen as the pointer. So,
So it'll just jump between them. It won't do right. some kind of crazy.
I'm not quite sure how that works because I've not actually, you know,
same one.
Well, yes. Yeah, I don't know. They might not even exist. I don't know.
I was about to call it Multi-Pointer X, but then I realized it's Mira. So
I'll just point out that that's now 5 devices of my prediction for this year that I said there'd be 10 by the end of the year. That's 5 now, and we're just at the end of 3 months into the year.
Not like you're keeping count or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No. I have ordered the full HD version today as well.
Ooh.
Of course you have.
Mm. Alan's ordered 2, no doubt.
No, I haven't. I'm still trying to blag one from work. Anyway, moving on.
You'll buy one as well anyway.
Yeah, I probably will. All right, yeah.
Oracle want Google to give them all the money. So they're seeking money.
How much money?
Because, $9.3 billion.
What did Oracle ever give the world that is worth $9.3 billion, really?
Well, apparently Java.
No.
No.
No, they bought.
They paid $9.3 billion for Java.
They paid quite a bit for that. Mm. Yeah.
So they've worked out that the combination, I think, of Google profits on Android and what Oracle could have made if they'd licensed it properly in the first place to Google, then that's $9 billion, something like that.
This sounds very much like the MPAA saying, well, if all those people who torrented every single film had paid full price in the cinema for the film, it would, they've embezzled trillions of dollars out of the movie industry, which is just rubbish. It's just, you know, patently incorrect because the world, you can't rewind the clock and then say, well, if this thing had changed, then we would have got all of this money, because Google's strategy might have been completely different if that was the case.
Or they might not have bothered.
Well, yes. Yeah, exactly. Or they might not have bought the company that originally made Android, because it wasn't Google who made Android. They might not have bought the company that made Android in the first place if they knew that there was this horrific baggage of Oracle coming along with it that they had to, you know, they had to pay for. Despite the fact that, you know, Java is open anyway, but, you
know. This whole This whole oracle thing, though, is after the fact, because it was kind of a gentleman's agreement between Google and Sun Microsystems when Sun Microsystems were still the copyright holder of Java.
Yeah.
So, awkward.
So, yeah, so they, I guess the thing about how much Google has made from Android is a bit more concrete. And they've made half that, nearly half, but yeah, more than half of that in a quarter.
Wow.
In profit. So you can kind of see why they're going after them. But it does feel a little bit like, you know, Google are doing well, so they want a bit of it.
Yeah, it feels a bit like kind of SCO Unix kind of going after, or was it IBM?
It really does. I was thinking the same thing earlier, and I was also hoping that maybe it ends as well for Oracle as it did for SCO.
I was over the weekend, there was a film, Avengers Assemble, which is a popular movie, Marvel movie.
And popular movie with the kids.
Yes. In fact, I recorded it and Sam just watched it just now, and every so often he pauses it and then comes running in here and tells me, "Hey, Daddy, I've just got to the bit where..." And then, yeah, all right, go away and watch it. Anyway, there's a bit in there. It's got some product placement from Oracle. And whenever I see that, I cringe. And then also look at it and think, oh, yes, I remember them. Because, you know, Oracle just don't seem to have any relevance. And it's when companies don't have that relevance anymore that they do things like this, exactly like SCO did. They're no longer relevant in the cloud age. So they go after people who are, who they think owe them some money. Have to see how that works out.
Google have also prepared their own damages report, and that they're only adrift from Google's estimate by $9.2 billion. So, you know, there's not like there's a much shortfall to make up in their negotiations there.
Come on, Mark, tell us some good news.
Well, Vocor have released a coin-sized Linux computer with Wi-Fi, which is running...
Which coin?
a reasonably large coin, I suppose. Not a 5p.
Like an old penny.
An old penny.
A really
is that the big
thick,
one?
Yes. Square old penny.
Yeah. Square.
An old penny as in pre-Even Allen penny.
Actually, I
don't
think
they had currency back then, did they? They just traded rocks.
Metrification came in the year I was born, thanks very much.
Aww.
But yes, I do remember old pennies, so go away.
Right. Yes. So this is an undetermined coin-sized Linux computer with Wi-Fi, which is running OpenWRT.
Oh, neat.
Yes. 1 square inch. It is. So it's yes. It's
nice.
It's
modern measurement there.
A one inch coin-sized computer.
The juxtaposition of having a .io domain and measuring things in square inches, I think, is excellent.
Yes, it's got a 360 megahertz MIPS processor and 32 meg of RAM, as well as Wi-Fi, USB, GPIO pins, and so on.
And everything about the hardware is all available off their website, so it's completely open hardware, full schematics, everything.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. That's even better.
Yeah.
And they're pitching it as Internet of Things friendly.
Of course,
because it's the small.
Because that's the new hotness.
It is really tiny, though. I hear it's the size of a penny. Tell us some more good news, Martin.
Well, it's now time to create your open source tunes. And Studio Ghibli use a piece of software called Tunes and have had it specially customized over the years. And that software has recently been acquired by a company called Duango, and part of the terms of sale were to release Tunes as open source. So we now have Open Tunes.
Forgive my ignorance. I with these strange names like Ghibli and Tunes, are we talking Tunes as in cartoons, or are we talking Tunes as in fat tunes?
No, no, we're talking cartoons.
What?
Studio Ghibli is...
I'm down with the kids, Laura.
Is they've now closed their doors, but a famous Japanese animation studio who publish feature-length films.
Oh, anime, notably, manga type stuff.
Yes, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, and a few more. Quite a lot more, but those are their biggest ones, I think.
The ones that are particularly popular in my house at the moment are Ponyo, Kiki's Delivery Service,
Kiki's Delivery
and
Service is
my neighbour Totoro.
My daughter loves those films. And it's important to point out, and it's also used, the same software has also been used to produce Futurama as well, for example, and Asterix.
Wow. Awesome.
So it's a sort of commercial grade 2D animation studio that can work with hand drawn and digital art assets, and it's now open source and it's on GitHub and it's under a BSD 3-clause license. Now here's the kicker: it's always been Mac and Windows only; those are now free downloads. But it took the Linux community, whatever that might be, in this case, some hardcore compiler experts, about 6 hours to discover this and start beavering away on a Linux port. And there's a lot of activity in actually producing a Linux port for this. So maybe sometime later this year, we'll have a version that runs on Linux as well, which would just be terrific.
Sweet. Cool. Look forward to seeing, having a try at downloading that and seeing if it can improve my complete terrible ability to draw. Probably not, I would imagine. Moving on, Red Hat becomes the first $2 billion open source company. This is good news, isn't it? Wow. This is validation.
Good news for Red Hat shareholders.
Well, yes, and also for proponents of open source, that a company like Red Hat that's been around for a very long time and has been advocating open source for years and years and years is now valued at $2 billion. That's amazing. Yes.
Mm. I don't quite understand exactly what it means for a company to be valued at $2 billion, but it's certainly a good number.
Yes, it sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds like a lot of money that a good open source citizen like Red Hat could put to good use.
Yes.
Mm. And in other interesting news, Microsoft have created it says here, a teenage Nazi, and then they killed her, which it's not a great headline, to be fair.
That's kind of what happened.
So they created a bot, basically.
Yes, an AI chat bot.
Like Eliza, that I created like 30 years ago on a VT100 mainframe as a college exercise, that would say, when you say, "How are you?" it would say, "I am fine." And that's about the level of intelligence mine got. But this one had a lot more intelligence.
Well, yes, this one could learn from what people said to it and...
They learned the wrong things, did it?
It basically, people decided to teach it that some fairly appalling things to say, which it then started saying. And so they decided that it was time to turn it off. it was meant to be a teenage girl who chatted about films and celebrities and stuff, but instead it started talking about World War II and unpleasant historic events and Donald Trump's views and so on.
See, this reminds me, there's a fantastic film, I don't know if any of you have seen it, called Colossus, The Forbin Project. It's a fabulous film. If you haven't seen it yet, I know, Laura, you're into seeing very old films, but this is a good one, Colossus, The Forbin Project.
Is it a long one, though?
No, it's not tremendously long.
It's not.
Is there a lot of desert?
No, but there's a lot of computers going bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop, and... when stuff comes up on screen, cool. It's very, very good. And this reminds me of that because there was a computer that went bad. So, for all of you who this was predicted years ago by Hollywood. So, don't do what Microsoft did and create a bot and then put it online. But Laura, you have some good news, I think.
I do. NVIDIA are providing tentative Mir and Wayland support.
Woohoo, in their latest driver. Mm. That's good, isn't it?
Yes. I think... generally it is.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's preliminary, not quite complete, but amazing that we've got this in the proprietary drivers now, because it really means that the desktop effort can start to focus on Mir and Wayland on more than just the open source drivers for things like Intel and Radeon. So that'll be good to see what comes of this.
So would Mir and Wayland desktops just not have worked with NVIDIA before? Would they just not have had accelerated compositing stuff?
Well, Mir doesn't work on NVIDIA proprietary driver at all until this version. I don't even know if it works with this version. I don't know if there's something needed in Mir. I mean, like it says, it's tentative support. It doesn't fully work. You can't install that driver, reboot, log in Unity 8 Mir and expect everything to be hunky-dory. It doesn't work. I tried it. So I've been through that pain for you. It may be that there's some other monkeying around that you have to do, some fiddling or something. I don't know. But it's early days. But as Martin said, the fact that they've done it is a great step forward.
And in more good news, the Steam controller Mechanical CAD Geometry has been released under a Creative Commons license.
Yes. So you can create your own accessories with 3D printers and the like.
Indeed. I hadn't thought of 3D printers. Oh, you have access to a 3D printer.
Mm. That was the first thing I thought of. What were you thinking that people could do with this?
What, me?
Draw it?
Yeah.
Well, I was no idea at all. I've got absolutely no interest.
Well, I think we've run out of time, Martin, conveniently.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, there's just one more thing I better get in finally.
Okay.
And that's that Azerbaijan, if I can say it, has cancelled daylight saving time. And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah, good for them.
I think everyone update TZ data.
I think everyone could learn a lesson from Azerbaijan there.
Yeah. Two lessons. The first lesson is you can cancel it. The second lesson is don't do it 10 days before the change is about to happen.
Do it one day after the change.
Very good point. I think that's all the news, isn't it?
Yes.
And now it's time for the community news and events.
Good.
And first up on our docket of things, George Castro sent a mail to the Ubuntu community team this week about the Ubuntu Wiki. There's been a long-standing thread for a while and long-standing discussions about how the Wiki, the Ubuntu Wiki, which is wiki.ubuntu.com, is slow and painful and horrible and doesn't get many software updates because it's based on very old software that nobody maintains anymore. Nobody puts out updates for anymore. So everyone's been calling for us to move off of that wiki platform onto something else that's faster and better maintained and has better spam protection and all that kind of stuff. And so as a first step, George sent a request ticket to the Canonical IS department, the techies, saying, hey, can we have a copy of the wiki? And expecting it to take some time because they're really busy. And they were like, yeah, okay. Just gave him a link to a complete like dump of the entire wiki and all the attachments in two files. So that if anyone wants to try and migrate to some other platform, they've got the live data there to do it, which I think is really useful.
Yeah.
So the UCARES system, which is a system updater, cleaner and optimizer, and I was trying to look it up earlier, and it seems to be, does it delete old kernels?
So, just before the show started, I downloaded this and unpacked it, and it's a Debian package. I saw it, it popped up on my feed from someone. I saw a news article somewhere, and it was reshared by someone, and I clicked the link and added it in here. Think it might be interesting. So I downloaded it, and it's basically a Debian package that contains a shell script. And that shell script basically does some of the things that you would normally type yourself. Like
apt-get auto-remove.
Like apt-get update, upgrade, auto-remove, clean, and a couple of other things. And it removes everything but the last two kernels. So, yes, it is quite a handy thing.
It doesn't use that ridiculous one-liner command line thing I bodged together a year or so ago when we were talking about this, does it?
I don't think it does. Maybe it does. It has a line that goes beyond the edge of my editor window,
interesting.
Which basically does an ls in slash boot and trims that list and picks out the kernel version numbers using grep and cut and awk. And then pipes that to dpackage query and purges those kernels that are older than the most recent.
I think that's slightly different to how I did it.
Yeah, I would hope this is a little bit more robust. But yes, it basically gets rid of old kernels, basically.
So is this a new release of it or just a completely new app?
So actually, it's not new. When I looked at the shell script, the first line of it was like copyright 2009 or something. So it's something someone's had kicking around. I'd just never heard of it. So I thought I'd mention it. It'd be nice if it got some updates, like maybe had a nice little UI front end or some way to schedule it, in a cron job, nice and friendly way. It might be a nice, useful tool. I realize that some of it is super basic, like just doing it, replicating what the update manager does, like update, upgrade. But there's a couple of things in there, like removing the old kernels. But then the flip side of me thinks, surely we shouldn't have to do that. Surely the system shouldn't be so broken that you update your system and you run out of space in Slash Boot, and then, you know, you can't boot the system.
All the time. Tell you what, formatting it helps.
Yeah, we'll hear more about that another time, I think.
There's been a discussion taking place on the KDE mailing list about how to handle KDE not respecting your distro's requirements. Now, I've not read all of this. I've only read 5 or 6 of the posts in this thread. But it's a very interesting discussion between some of the KDE folks and some of the OpenSUSE folks, sort of lamenting and trying to understand why, in their opinion, KDE is not as dominant as perhaps GNOME 3, and what the reasons for that might be, and what KDE can do to better position themselves to increase the popularity of their technology.
Right. And this happened on a mailing list, a relatively new mailing list that was created sort of in response recently to, I think, when there was a brouhaha recently about the KDE Neon project, and there was some miscommunication or misunderstanding about what KDE Neon was and whether it was a distribution and whether real existing distributions should worry about the existence of KDE Neon, and whether it mattered that KDE Neon was seen as a distribution by users. And I think they created this list partly as a way to foster communication between KDE as an upstream and all the distros that provide KDE to their users. And I think there was possibly a misunderstanding from KDE's point of view as to what this list was for. It seemed to be like, look, we're going to tell you this is how we're doing KDE, and you can provide some feedback. But it's very much the other way around. It's very much it's not the KDE people telling everyone this is what we're doing. It's more the distributions telling KDE everything they're doing wrong and how they might be able to fix those things, which I think is valuable anyway, so long as it's done in a respectful way. And it is an interesting thread, and it is worth a read if you're interested in, you know, the minutiae of packaging in KDE and how it relates to different distros. It's worth a read.
Edubuntu, one of the official Ubuntu flavors, which I believe has been going almost since the beginning of Ubuntu, has announced that there will not be a 16.04 LTS release. And the 14.04 LTS release is the last release that they're planning on making, and it will be maintained until the LTS end of life, which I believe is another 3 years away. Or maybe even more than that. But basically, they announced with 14.04 they were going to go LTS only, with the hope that someone else would pick it up in time for 16.04, and no one has. So I think there's two guys who have been involved for a very long time in Edubuntu, and are going to keep it going for the current support term, basically. But if new leadership isn't found, it will be dropped as of 17.10.
Mm. Yes. So that's a bit sad because, you know, it's been around for a long time. I don't know what the install base of Edubuntu is. I don't know how many people still use Edubuntu. No idea at all. And maybe this will be a good way to kickstart people to step up and maintain it if they know that it's, you know, it's going to end in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, It is sad because one of the things I remember about Ubuntu way, way back in the very, very early days is there was Ubuntu and Edubuntu. And Edubuntu seemed to be sort of one of the sort of flagships, the wrong term, but it was a key sort of marketing.
Yeah, it gave it sort of a professional face almost. Yeah. I mean, obviously there was a company behind it, but it was in the beginning it did kind of seem like a hobbyist thing, whereas Edubuntu was like, here's a specific use case for this.
Which is ironic because Edubuntu was pretty much entirely community maintained.
Yeah.
In the days you're talking about, like Ubuntu was maintained by Canonical and Edubuntu was maintained by Stefan and Jonathan as community members. And then other things, you know, they had other things to do and they didn't have time to continue developing Edubuntu, which is a shame. But, you know, sometimes products reach an end of life and that is the end of life. And maybe it doesn't need to carry on. I don't know. I think maybe some of the users might step up. Maybe. Who knows? And speaking of flavors, there's a new flavor on the block, although not actually technically an official flavor, Ubuntu BSD. And it's apparently Ubuntu with the rock-solid stability and performance of the FreeBSD kernel. So this popped up. This popped up on one of the Debian mailing lists. I noticed someone say, you know, I've created this thing. It's called Ubuntu BSD, and it's basically what looks like, on the outside, looks like Ubuntu. So if you booted it up and installed it, it would look like XFCE, like Zubuntu-based install, but underneath the covers, there's actually not Linux, it's the BSD kernel, which is an interesting technical challenge to do. I don't think anyone's ever tried to do that with Ubuntu. Obviously, there's a Debian BSD flavor. Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever tried to do it with Ubuntu. So it's an interesting technical challenge for someone to actually try to do and get the thing booted.
So what actually make, you know, it's got a FreeBSD kernel and an XFCE desktop. What else have they done to it to make it Ubuntu?
Well, it uses Ubuntu packages, so that...
Oh, as in Debian packages?
As in Ubuntu Archive, the ones that were built for Ubuntu.
Oh, okay, so
the
they rebuilt...
ripped out from underneath it, and the FreeBSD kernel put in place.
Right. Presumably, though, they have do they then have to rebuild all of the packages for the BSD kernel? I don't know how...
I have no idea. I know there's some that needed patching.
Answers on a postcard.
And the guy who mailed the list has provided patches to all of the packages that he's touched in order to get the thing working. Because obviously he'd have to monkey with some stuff that had Linux specific stuff in. So he's had to patch a bunch of stuff, and he's provided all the patches. So he's being a very good citizen, announcing it on the Debian BSD list and providing all the patches and, you know, making an ISO available on SourceForge. Can't have everything.
So there's more flavor news. Actually, not flavor, it's another remix. And that there's Ubuntu Budgie, which I think is a brilliant name. And it's an Ubuntu spin it's a version of Ubuntu with the Budgie desktop, which I'd never heard of before.
From Solus, is that the project it's from?
Yeah, so, well, it's Ikey Doherty's desktop project that is flagshipped in Solus, yeah. Right. And I installed this earlier, and I was very impressed, I have to say. So whoever's putting this together has put together a very tidy distribution, and I could see that they're well on the road to getting this as an official flavour, if that's what they choose to do. And it's better than some of the long-standing Ubuntu derivatives that are out there in terms of how it's presented and works. You know, Ubiquiti has a slideshow and actually introduces you to the Budgie desktop. I was very impressed indeed.
Feeling a bit of pressure there, Martin. Cool. Hey.
Always.
Okay,
right, we've got some events.
Yes, let's rattle through some of these events. Laura, what's up first?
There's a Maker Faire in Vienna, the greatest show and tell on earth, and that's at the Academie der Bildenden in Kunst, Vienna, Austria.
When's that?
Oh, yeah. 16th to 17th of April.
Cool. Martin?
We've got the Egg and Raspberry Jam. It's the big and small theme. So bring your big and small Raspberry Pi projects. That's in Staines upon Thames in the UK on Sunday, the 24th of April. You can find out more from eggandjam11.eventbrite.com.
When did Alan Staines become Staines upon Thames? It's always been Staines.
Trying to get rid of the Ali G.
Yeah, exactly.
Image.
In more classy joints, there's the Linux Fest Northwest, which features internationally recognised speakers, interesting exhibits and demonstrations. Nearly said decimations then. Maybe that, I don't know. Admission is free and all ages are welcome. It's in Bellingham, what's WA in America?
Washington,
that's it, in the US of A, 23rd to the 24th of April, 2016. Go to linuxfestnorthwest.org for more info.
And finally, Ubuntu Podcast Live, FosTalk Live, which is a free evening of live Linux podcasts featuring Linux Voice, Linux Luddites, and us, and special guests. And that's in King's Cross. It's not just randomly around King's Cross. There is actually a venue which is available on the website, fostalk.com. It's on Saturday, the 6th of August. Tickets are limited but free.
Awesome. And that's the end of the community news and events.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh.
If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 5. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing breaking the internet, and we'll bring you some command line love.
Ooh, we've got more command line love, have we?
Yes, we have.
Goody. Always. I look forward to those. Honest.
Me some command line.
I wouldn't be sarcastic or anything. I love those.
It's Laura's favourite segment.
It is.
Yeah.
Just had two enthusiasts.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, we'll see you all next time.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Someone say stop.